in the 24th chapter tonight of Genesis, and this to me is one of the most beautiful of these chapters. It was not written simply to tell us of the courtship of Isaac and Rebekah, but written here to show that Abraham's faith in the promise of God was such that he neither wanted his son to return back to Haran, nor did he want him to marry a woman of the Canaanites. He wanted him to marry one who had a religious background such as his own. This is one of the lessons. A second is his faith that God will guide and direct the servant that he sends to Haran in this matter, and that God will provide for the need. But I think one of the additional outstanding lessons of the chapter is its teaching on the providence of God. Now, as you know, if you've listened to me teach very much, heard me preach very much, that I believe very strongly in God's providence. That is, that God rules in all realms. He rules by those laws that he has set up, that he controls, and through which he operates. Now, this chapter is especially one on that. Later on, we come to Joseph. Joseph's life is also a chapter on providence. Great providence, a great life of providence and God's working in his life. The book of Esther is a book of divine providence. So you see so many of these in the book of Ecclesiastes. To me, is one of the great books of the Old Testament that deals with the providence of God. That's stressed all the way through. So these great lessons are some of the lessons that we should learn as we study the Old Covenant, for the same principles, of course, are set forth in the New, but not quite so well illustrated as they are in the Old. So tonight we begin our 24th chapter. We've had the death now of Sarah. Now, with the death of Sarah, 3 years later, Abraham begins to realize now that he must make provision for God's for the carrying out of the promise of God in his family. There must be the proper wife selected for Isaac. And this, I think, is that which moves him this time. Now, in our last lesson, we had the death and burial of Sarah. All right? And Abraham was old and well stricken in age. And Jehovah had blessed Abraham in all things. Now really, about all we need to do in this chapter is simply to read it. And so I'll do that with a few comments as we go along. But mainly, it's simply the reading of it, because it's self-explanatory as we move along in it. And Abraham said unto his servant. Now notice he is not named. Now probably Eliezer, who had been his servant back 50 or 40 or 60 years ago, may have been dead by now, or this may have been Eliezer. I'm not sure, but he's not named at any rate. And Abraham said unto his servant, the elder of his house, that is probably in rank, one of the outstanding men among his servants, for he had many of them, the elder of his house, that ruled over all that he had. You see, he's the chief one. Put, I pray thee, thy hand under my thigh. Now, we have that twice. Here, Abraham asked that type of an oath, and so did Jacob when he told Joseph to put his hands under his thigh and swear as to what he would do. Now, I don't conclude from that that this was a custom, for if it was, we know nothing about it. May or may not have been. It may have been that simply putting the hand under the thigh was indicating the idea of the coming of the Messiah through the seed of this one. But, of course, it didn't come through Joseph. So of that, we're just not sure. So although in the only two cases, the other is the 47th chapter and verse 29, that we have of this particular thing. At any rate, it seemingly, somehow, he had him do that. I just don't know why exactly. And I will make thee swear by Jehovah, the God of heaven and the God of the earth, that thou wilt not take a wife for my son of the daughters of the Canaanites among whom I dwell, but thou shalt go unto my country and to my kindred and take a wife for my son Isaac. Now notice he swears by heaven, by the earth, by all that God has created. Now you will notice it's he swears here, God the Creator. I made this observation several times, that when God is used back here, it seems to indicate the one of power, while Jehovah is the one of mercy. So when mercy and the promise of mercy is under consideration, it's Jehovah. When it's power here, and here God of heaven and earth, which would be, you see, the Creator there, the one who exercises power in all realms and has the power then to guide you into the selecting of the right one to be my daughter-in-law. Now he said, you'll go and take a wife from my kindred. And the servant said unto him, peradventure the woman will not be willing to follow me unto this land. Must I needs bring thy son again unto the land from which thou camest? Now, before this man is willing to take such an oath as that, he wants to know all that's implied in it. He wants to understand that. And that's a mighty good thing always to practice. Before you enter into an agreement with an individual or one, understand what's involved in that. Even the marriage covenant. Two ought to understand what's involved in that. Or a business covenant. Whatever the oath is. Understand what's involved in it. Now, if this woman that I find will not come, shall I then take Isaac into that land? No. Abraham says no. And Abraham said unto him, beware thou that thou bring not my son thither again. No, don't take him into that land. Jehovah the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my nativity, and who spake unto me, and who sware unto me, saying, unto thy seed will I give this land. He will send his angel before thee, and thou shalt take a wife for my son from thence. Now that shows Abraham's deep faith in God. Now we pointed out last time, back I think in the 22nd chapter in verse 15, wasn't it? By myself have I sworn, saith Jehovah. God began in Genesis 12 with a promise. He then sealed that promise with a covenant in the 15th chapter. Then in the 17th chapter, here was the covenant of circumcision. Now in the 22nd chapter, here he confirms it with an oath. That, as we said last time as we closed, that by the two immutable things in which it's impossible for God to lie, that is his word, his promise, and the oath that confirmed that. God could not lie in either one. So he said, he'll send his angel before thee, and thou shalt take a wife for my son from thence. And if the woman be not willing to follow thee, then thou shalt be clear from this my oath. Only thou shalt not bring my son thither again. And the servant put his hand under the thigh of Abraham his master, and swear to him concerning this matter. Now, this is the first time that Abraham has... No, that'll come later, the point I was going to make a few verses later. He's the servant, and Abraham the master. But now then, with this thing cleared up now, why, then he goes ahead and makes the oath there as to what he will do. But I think there's no question in Abraham's mind but what God in his providence will provide a wife for Isaac. He shows that very deep faith here, and it works out just exactly that way. All right, so here the servant recognizes Abraham as his master and swear concerning this. And the servant ready now for his journey. And the servant took 10 camels of the camels of his master and departed, having all goodly things of his master's in hand. And he arose and went to Mesopotamia, that is the land between the rivers there, Aram of the two rivers, under the city of Nahor. And Nahor, you remember, was Abraham's brother. All right, now what was that city of Nahor? It was Haran, wasn't it? It was Haran, between the rivers. There was the river Euphrates and another river there, but I don't know that it was the Tigris. Could have been the Tigris. But at any rate, it's up between, there was another river, the name has slipped me now, that it was near. So we went then unto the city of Nahor, which was Haran. And does anyone remember about how far that was? I guess it was, no, it was in my class over at Northside. We had that a while back. 500 miles, about 500 miles from Beersheba to Haran. You'll notice now that that trip, being without incident, it just passed over there. And verse 11, we've arrived there. But the 10 camels would provide for the return of the girl and the carrying also of all of their needs and provisions on the trip. And he made the camels to kneel down. Now, he's reached that city now, without the city, by the well of water, at the time of evening, the time that women go out to draw water. Now, that was the way that a camel rest and make them to kneel down, and then they rest in that position. And he said, and I praise, now notice his prayer, O Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, send me, I pray thee, good speed this day, and show kindness unto my master Abraham. Notice he's thinking about Abraham, a very devoted servant, and I think I see something else here. But Abraham's faith in God has rubbed off on this servant. He has the same faith that you notice in his master Abraham. And he continues to pray. Behold, I am standing by the fountain of water, and the daughters of the men of the city are coming out to draw water. And let it come to pass that the damsel to whom I shall say, let down thy pitcher, I pray thee, that I may drink. And she shall say, drink, and I will give thy camels drink also. Let the same be she that thou hast appointed for thy servant Isaac. And thereby shall I know that thou hast showed kindness unto my master. That's the master that he's thinking about. This is the one he's concerned about, is Abraham. Right? Now notice the simplicity of that prayer and the simplicity of that faith. God will act according to that. Would you have that faith? Yes, I would either. And yet, if I take all that God has promised and all that God has said in the Bible concerning the answering of prayer, why, I think there are occasions where it would be very similar to that, but I don't know that I have that kind of faith. I ought to have. Do you have it? Now, remember Abraham's faith earlier when it was the promise of way out yonder, why, he could rely on that. When it came to an immediate need, he had to help the Lord out. But I think his faith has grown. And now his servant's faith is very strong. And it came to pass, before he had done speaking, that behold, Rebekah came out, who was born to Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor. Now, I know Rebekah here, who was born to Bethuel, that was her father, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor. So this would be a granddaughter of Nahor, what we would call a second cousin to Isaac, and a great niece of Abraham's. Nahor, Abraham's brother, with a pitcher upon her shoulder. Now that's just a little interesting incident, that here in Mesopotamia, the women carried the pitcher on their shoulder, but down in Egypt, they carried it on their head. You see the pictures of that. And she carried it upon her shoulder. And the damsel was very fair to look upon, a virgin. Neither had any man known her. And she went down to the fountain and filled her pitcher and came up. Now that indicates here that like so many of those wells over there, you go downstairs here till you get to the water. Sometimes they would draw the water, but sometimes you went down to it. So this indicates you went down to it, filled a pitcher, came up out. And the servant ran. That's a Hebrew expression for went hurriedly. I don't think he ran, but he moved rapidly to meet her and said, give me to drink, I pray thee. Now, notice that's a very courteous way to say, I pray thee, or please. We would say, would you please give me a drink, a little water from thy pitcher. And she said, drink, my lord. And she hasted to let down her pitcher upon her hand and gave him drink. And when she had done giving him drink, she said, I will draw for thy camels also until they have done drinking. Probably this servant was an elderly man, and she's very courteous and very hospitable and shows a wonderful spirit there, the kind of a woman that this man was looking for. And she hasted and emptied her pitcher into the trough and ran again under the well to draw and drew for all his camels. And they tell me those camels are almost inexhaustible when you start trying to fill. It takes an inexhaustible supply to fill them up. I don't know. They say they can really put away the water. And drew for all his camels. And the man looked steadfastly on her, holding his peace, that if he was watching diligently as she did all it, to know whether Jehovah had made his journey prosperous or not. And it came to pass as the camels had done drinking, that the man took a golden ring of half a shekel weight and two bracelets for her hands of 10 shekels weight of gold. Now this ring was a nose ring. We'll learn that a little later. But he didn't put it in her nose or on her nose, wherever they put it, but showed it to, held it up before her and the others to give to her, and said, whose daughter art thou? Tell me, I pray thee. Is there room in thy father's house for us to lodge in? And she said unto him, I am the daughter of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, whom she bare unto Nahor. She said moreover unto him, we have both straw and provender, that would be fodder, enough and room to lodge in. And the man bowed his head and worshipped Jehovah. And he said, blessed be Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham. Now that lets her know who this is that is addressing her. A servant of Abraham, her uncle, kinsman, whom she had never seen, and who had been gone a long time, who hath not forsaken his loving kindness and his truth toward my master. As for me, Jehovah hath led me in the way to the house of my master's brethren. When he said this, the damsel ran and told her mother's house according to these words. Now you will notice that her mother is mentioned here, and Nahor had concubines. I think we've mentioned these before. If we don't, we mention them later. No, they came in before. And Rebekah had a brother, and his name was Laban. And Laban ran out unto the man under the fountain. And it came to pass, when he saw the ring and the bracelets upon his sister's hands, and when he heard the words of Rebekah his sister saying, thus spake the man unto me, thus spake the man unto me, that he came unto the man, and behold, he was standing by the camels at the fountain. Right, so Laban then, when he heard the girl's story, saw the bracelets of gold. Now, I'm not going to say that he was a covetous man and thing like that, but we learn later on that he was a man that sort of admired wealth anyhow. I suspect that had a little to do with it, though I'm not going to say that was the whole thing, because he shows a very courteous attitude also. And said, come in, thou blessed of Jehovah, wherefore standest thou without? For I have prepared the house and room for the camels. Indicates there that some time, a few moments had passed, maybe didn't take much preparation. And the man came into the house, and he ungirded the camels, and he gave straw and provender for the camels and water to wash his feet and the feet of the men that were with him. And there was set food before him to eat. But he said, I will not eat until I told mine errand. And he said, speak on. That is, Laban said, speak on. So now notice that this man, this servant, is so devoted to his master that although it was customary to eat, I've read, that it was customary to eat before you begin to tell your business. Well, he doesn't do that. He tells the business first. This is first with him. All right? And he said, speak on. And he said, I am Abraham's servant. And Jehovah hath blessed my master greatly. And he had become great, and he hath given him flocks and herds and silver and gold, and men servants and maid servants and camels and asses. And Sarah, my master's wife, bare a son to my master when she was old, and unto him hath he given all that he hath. That is, Abraham has given unto this son all that he hath. Now, he says all of this to indicate unto Laban and unto Rebekah and unto the mother and the father that this is a worthy son-in-law. He is a worthy man. He's a man that can take excellent care of Rebekah, a man of wealth and of means. Now, he's not trying to buy Rebekah. I don't think it's that at all. But he's just simply impressing them with the fact that Isaac is an excellent, make an excellent son-in-law and husband for Rebekah, have given all that he had. And my master made me swear, say, thou shalt not take a wife for my son of the daughters of the Canaanites, in whose land I dwell, but thou shalt go into my father's house and to my kindred, and take a wife for my son. And I said unto my master, and he goes over that which we already know, peradventure the woman will not follow me. And he said unto me, Jehovah, before whom I walk, will send his angel with thee and prosper thy way. And thou shalt take a wife for my son of my kindred and of my father's house. Then shalt thou be clear from thy oath when thou comest to my kindred. And if they give her not to thee, thou shalt be clear from my oath. And I came this day unto the fountain and said, O Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, if now thou dost prosper my way which I go, behold, I am standing by the fountain of water. And let it come to pass that the maiden that cometh forth to draw, to whom I shall say, give me, I pray thee, a little water from thy pitcher to drink. And she shall say to me, both drink thou, and I will also draw for thy camel. Let the same be the woman whom Jehovah hath appointed for my master's son. Now we could have passed over that. Is to show that his selection of Rebekah is providential. That God is answering both the request of Abraham and the prayer of the servant. So it's providential. This, of course, with all of this, together with the fact that Abraham has prospered, it all belongs to Isaac, all of that would tend toward inducing Rebekah to go with him and the parents to give her into his hand. It would show also that the man was not a shyster trying to pull something on them there. They would understand all of this. And before I had done speaking in my heart, now notice that's an interesting expression. Back here it says here, they had petitioned. God doesn't say, I beseech, he besought God. But it was a prayer. He was speaking in his heart. That's an interesting thing, and I think a point we can learn in prayer. I think there are times when an individual, many times, most of the time, when one should be in seclusion with the Lord, and pray to him, maybe audibly, or maybe saying the words in his mind or heart. There are other times when it's not conducive to oral praying, but he prayed in his heart. So notice it, but it's more than just thinking. He was actually talking to the Lord in his heart. When I had done speaking in my heart, behold, Rebekah came forth with a pitcher on her shoulder. And she went down into the fountain and drew. And I said unto her, let me drink, I pray thee. And she made haste and let down her pitcher from her shoulder and said, drink, and I will give thy camel to drink also. So I drank, and she made the camel to drink also. And I asked her and said, whose daughter art thou? And she said, the daughter of Bethuel, Nahor's son, whom Milcah bare unto him. And I put the ring upon her nose, and the bracelets upon her hand, that is, gave it to her to put on the nose. So it was a nose ring, as they wore them in that particular day. And I bowed my head and worshipped Jehovah and blessed Jehovah, the God of my master Abraham, who had led me in the right way to take my master's brother's daughter for his son. And now, if you will deal kindly and truly with my master, tell me, and if not, tell me, that I may turn to the right hand or the left. that I may know whether to go to the right or to the left. What more, what I must do further is what he's asking. All right? Now notice Laban's part in this. The brother has plays quite an important part in it. Then Laban and Bethuel answered and said, "The thing proceeded from Jehovah." Evidently, they turned and looked at each other, maybe talked among themselves, between themselves, for a moment or two. Then they said, "This thing proceeded from Jehovah. We cannot speak unto thee bad or good." That is, we can neither say yes nor no. If this is from God, we'll have to accept it. It is from him. "Behold, Rebekah is before thee. Take her and go, and let her be thy master's son's wife, as Jehovah has spoken." And it came to pass that when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself down to the earth under Jehovah. Notice it's a very devout man. A devout is Abraham. He learned all of this from his master Abraham. And the servant brought forth jewels of silver and gold, jewels of gold. Now that word jewels there may be objects or vessels. In other words, some very precious presents that he brings here. He's not buying this wife, but this is a dowry that indicates the wealth of Abraham and of Isaac. "And jewels of gold and raiment, and gave them to Rebekah. He gave also to her brother and to her mother precious things." And probably the things to the mother would include the father, though he's not mentioned here. "Precious things. And they did eat and drink." Now notice he doesn't eat and drink until all of this is settled now. "And they did eat and drink, and the men that were with him," that is those that came with the servant, "and tarried all night, and they rose up in the morning, and he said, that's the head servant, "Send me away unto my master." He wants to get going right now. "And a brother and a mother said, let the damsel abide with us a few days, at the least 10, after that she shall go. And he said unto them, hinder me not, seeing Jehovah hath prospered my way. Send me away, that I may go to my master." Now, the longer you put it off, sometimes the harder these goodbyes are. And so let's get it over with. I've fulfilled my mission. Let me return in haste unto my master. And that will settle the mind of Abraham as well as Isaac. And they said, we will call the damsel and inquire at her hand mouth. Now, they didn't seem to ask her whether she was willing to go or not. But they do ask her, are you willing to go now? Or you want to wait a while? And they called Rebekah and said unto her, wilt thou go with this man? And she said, I will go. And they sent away Rebekah, their sister, and her nurse, and Abraham's servant, and his men. And also her nurse, later on in 35:8, when this nurse died, we have her name. Does anybody remember her name? That's right, Deborah. You better than I could. I wouldn't have remembered it. I studied it in the past, but I did look it up today at Deborah. All right? And Abraham's servant and his men. And they blessed Rebekah and said unto her, our sister, be thou the mother of thousands, of 10,000s, and let thy seed possess the gate of those that hate them. That is, let them overcome their enemies. This is a general blessing that's so often made. And Rebekah arose and her damsels, that is not only the nurse, but some of the maidens that waited on her, and they rode upon the camels and followed the man and the servant, took Rebekah and went his way. Now you see they brought a lot of stuff on the camels. Some of it they left, some of it of course they're taking back. But now then they have Rebekah and the damsels and Deborah going with them. And Isaac came from the way of Beer Lehi-Roi. Now that was the well of him that seeth. You remember back in the 16th chapter when Hagar was fleeing down toward Shur, and God spoke to her there, and she was without water. No, not fleeing. This is the time that, that's when she was fleeing. And he showed her this water, and she called it the well of him that sees, or of the seeing eye. Now, that was down in the area in which Ishmael had gone. But Isaac is there. Apparently, Isaac and Ishmael, whatever difference they had, that was over. It seems to me now he goes down into his area and neighborhood, But he'd been down there, and I was returning back from there, and Isaac came from the way of Beer Lahairoi, for he dwelt in the land of the south, that is the Negev. And Isaac went out to meditate, maybe to pray. I rather think that he was a... Isaac is an unusual fellow. He's not the exciting character that Abraham was, nor is it in the type of man that Jacob was. He's a quiet man, a meditative, reflective man. You can't help but wonder if that experience on the mountain in the land of Moriah, and there he was offered up as a sacrifice and the knife was raised, if that experience doesn't affect and influence all of his life. I don't know that it did, but I can't help wondering if it didn't. Might have, probably did. But at any rate, it doesn't mean that he is just an indifferent fellow. No, he wasn't that. But he was a quiet, meditative, reflective man. And that seems to be indicated all the way through his life. He went out in the field to meditate at eventide, and he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels coming. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she saw Isaac, she alighted from the camel. I've read that was an act of courtesy on the part of a woman when they came into the presence of a man to alight from the camel. Whether that's so or not, she did that. And she said unto the servant, "What man is this that walketh in the field to meet us?" And the servant said, "It is my master." And she took her veil and covered herself. That is, it was more than just a veil over the face. It seems to have been a one that started here and wrapped around the body. You've seen the pictures. I mean, it seems to still be wearing some of that type of thing in that country now. And the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. And Isaac brought her into his mother Sarah's tent and took Rebekah, and she became his wife. That he took her, that means he married her. She became his wife, and he loved her. And Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. And I don't think that means he'd been grieving for 3 years. That wouldn't be very complimentary of a man to keep grieving for 3 years. And I don't think that that's the point. I think the point is, sure, he had missed his mother. Now then, he has a wife, and he's comforted in the fact that and the mother is dead, or the mother's death. So I don't think he'd been grieving all that time. All right. Now, this then is that, I think, a very beautiful chapter. And it shows us that great faith on Abraham's part, great faith on the servant's part, and the providence of God. How God in his providence brought these two together. I don't think God's going to do that in exactly that way, but I do believe that if, and remember, Isaac was 40 years old at this time. I don't know how old Rebekah was. We may learn later. I'm not sure. No, we don't, because Sarah is the only woman in the Bible whose age God ever gives, is ever told. That's the only woman whose age is recorded in the Bible. So we don't know how old Rebekah was. But at any rate, he was 40. But I'm persuaded that if young people who are contemplating marriage will pray enough and have enough faith in God, that God in his providence will bring the proper two together. I believe that. And I think that that's a part of the teaching of the Bible. All right. Now then, Sarah had been dead for 3 years, and Abraham took another wife, and her name was Keturah. All right. Now that's Abraham's second marriage here. I want you to note a point down here in a moment. And they named those sons of Abraham by Keturah. We're not going to go through them. Come on down to about verse 5. All right. And Abraham gave all that he had unto Isaac. But unto the sons of the concubines that Abraham had, Abraham gave gifts, and he sent them away from Isaac. That is, these sons. Now there she's called, though she's called a wife in verse 1, I think she's called a concubine here. That is, she's one of the concubines. Although Hagar was a wife, I think this word concubine means a secondary wife. I know that later on when the law was given, that an individual that had a wife and had concubines, he, when he distributed his goods, he had to distribute, or rather had to treat the children of the concubine and treat the concubine with a certain degree of consideration and respect in these matters. All right, and so here she is called, I think, a concubine. Look at also at 1 Chronicles chapter 1, verse 31. Here again you have this idea in 1 Chronicles 1 and verse 31 here. If I can just find it here in a moment. All right, in 32 it is. And the sons of Keturah, Abraham's concubine, and the same ones are named there. All right, so there, but he also mentions his concubines, which leads me to believe that though he said he took a wife, and Sarah gave Hagar unto him to be his wife, these were secondary wives. And so that's what a concubine seems to have been, a secondary wife. And so when he speaks here of his concubines in verse 6, I don't know of any other than Hagar and Keturah. So it leads me then to conclude that these are the two under consideration. Now there's another point there that I think we should remember, and that is that back in chapter 17 and verse 4, that God promised Abraham here, as for me, behold, my covenant is with thee, and thou shalt be the father of a multitude of nations. Right, so here then there were nations that came through Ishmael, and there are nations that came through Keturah, and then there was the nation of Israel that came through Isaac. Right, and so he is the father of a multitude of nations, and that might have been in Abraham's mind when he took Keturah here to fulfill that particular promise. But be that as it may, he gave gifts to them, sent them away from Isaac his son, while he yet lived, eastward into the east country. The Ishmaelites, we'll note that in a few moments, all the way from Shur, clear over toward the way of Syria, and that would be in the Arabian. Can't identify these tribes. Possible almost to identify. Sent them eastward, and Abraham's life, which he lived, 103 away. And these are the days of the years of Abraham's life, which he lived, 103 years. Right now, if he was 100 years old when Isaac was born, and Isaac was, how old was he when Esau and Jacob were born? He was 80, wasn't he? He was 40 when he married, but it was 40 years later before he had these two sons. Well, that means then that Abraham lived 15 years into the life of Jacob and Esau, did he not? It'd be 15 years there. That doesn't make any difference, but just interesting to note that. Right, and Abraham gave up the ghost at an old age, an old man and full of years, and was gathered to his people. That's an expression that we find quite often there, when one dies, is gathered unto his people. Now, I think that that does not simply indicate gathered to them in death, or that they've died and he's died. I think it indicates the confidence of those people back there of life after this life. That they're not dead. The body is dead. But although they may have had a kind of a shadowy concept of the hereafter, of life beyond this, there was still faith in it, that there was life beyond. So he was gathered to his fathers. You'll notice that quite often. Could mean the other, but I think it means more than simply to die and be buried. It couldn't be in the tomb, because he wasn't buried in the tomb with his fathers. And Isaac and Ishmael, his sons, buried him in the cave of Machpelah, in the field of Ephron, the son of Zohar, the Hittite, which is before Mamre. That's where he had buried Sarah. Now you'll notice that Ishmael and Isaac buried him. Wherever Ishmael was, Ishmael got the word that his father was dead. He came to the funeral, as it were, and the two, and that indicates that there is no animosity between them. Actually, I don't think that Ishmael is presented really as a bad type of person. Now, it is said that he would be as a wild ass over against his brethren. All that could mean is, the possibility that all it means is, that he is a free type of an individual. He's a more of a wanderer. He was an archer and didn't stay settled in any place very often. Even though he mocked little Isaac when he was born, he wasn't but about 14 years old then, 12 to 14, and so that'd be kind of characteristic to have a boy of that age. You wouldn't expect him to be a grown man and to act like one. But at any rate, you don't find a whole lot of real bad in him. I'm saying that because sometimes we get the idea that he was a wild guy. Well, I think he was a man of the out of doors and the wanderer, wandered about. But take that as it be that as it may. Here he's associated with his brother at this time, where they buried him. And it came to pass after the death of Abraham that God blessed Isaac his son, and Isaac dwelt by Beer Lahai-Roi. That would be down in the general area of where Ishmael dwelt. He dwelt in that general area there. I guess you remember about where all of that is. I haven't. Comes down here and around down here. And here we come. All right, here was Jerusalem up here. Here's Beersheba, located off down here, somewhere about here. Here was Hebron, along here. All right, now here was Shur, down here, seemingly a line of forts on the border of Egypt. The word Shur means wall. So there was not a wall, but seems to have been a wall of forts there. And now in here somewhere is Beer Lahai-Roi, down in this area here toward the south, somewhere along here. As you go on down toward this area, it was somewhere in that particular area. Right, now, and he dwelt in that. Now you come to the seventh of these, what we call generations. We've had six of them so far. Generations of the heaven and the earth, the generations of Shem, the generations of Noah, and of Shem, and so on back there. And of Abraham was the last one, the generation of Terah. And now the generations of Ishmael, Abraham's son, whom Hagar, the Egyptian, Sarah's handmaid, bare unto Abraham. Now this is very short, one of the shorter ones. These are the names of the sons of Ishmael. Now there are 12 of them, if you will notice, for God had said that there would be 12 of these princes. Now these are the sons of Ishmael, and these are their names by their villages and by their encampments, 12 princes according to their nations. That is, the land or the village where they dwelt was named after the sun. And so sometimes it's difficult to determine whether you're talking about an individual or a place, because sometimes the place is named after the individual. So here are the names of these individuals and their villages, 12 princes according to their nations. And these are the years of the life of Ishmael, 137. And he gave up the ghost and died and was gathered unto his people. Now there's the same expression that we had of Abraham back there. And you have similar expressions back earlier in Genesis. Now does that indicate that he had somehow imbibed the faith of his father Abraham, lived according to it? I know that God said that he would not inherit, the handmaid would not inherit with the son of the free woman. That's true. But that doesn't mean that he couldn't be a servant of God also. So although he was with his father until he was 12 or 14 years old, and how much of the father's faith rubbed off on him, I don't know. So whether this indicates that he simply died and was gathered to those beyond death, or whether it indicates that he was gathered with the same family or the same group as Abraham, I couldn't answer. I'll leave that for you to try to come. But at any rate, it's interesting, isn't it, that he was gathered to his father's. He came to the father's funeral here, you don't see the bad guy in him. At least I haven't in this study. And I once thought, well, they're not as sorry as Esau was. Esau was a lot worse than he was. Okay, fine. Now, I have any question over this? Question over anything we've had thus far? Now we come to the generations of Isaac. We're going to travel with Isaac now for a little while. Isaac, Abraham's son. Abraham begat Isaac, and Isaac was 40 years old when he took Rebekah, the daughter of Bethuel, the Syrian of Padan Aram, the sister of Laban, the Syrian, to be his wife. And Isaac entreated Jehovah for his wife, because she was barren. And Jehovah was entreated of him, and Rebekah his wife conceived. And the children struggled. Probably a better word is jostled. Someone has said a better word is jostled. In the womb there that indicated them, of course, whether it was a struggle or just a movement there, together within her. And she said, if it be so, wherefore do I live? That is, to what am I destined here? I don't think she meant I'm ready to die over this, but to what am I destined? What is my destiny? Why do I live here? What is all of this about? I'd asked for, Isaac had prayed for, up here for one son, prayed for a son, entreated Jehovah, and now then, seems she's going to have double. And she went to inquire of Jehovah. And Jehovah said unto her,